Okay, thank you, Jessica. I would like to use four examples of field kind of production scale research to illustrate the genetic environment management interactions on crop water use efficiency. So these are largely central plains regions of the United States, and I'm going to start with a dry land cropping system. As I go through these talks, I'll be talking about crop water productivity, and I define that as the mass of grain or biomass in some cases divided by the evapotranspiration. So in this case, the evaporative component of water loss is included. This is the crop per drop that we all talk about. So I'd like to start with an example from dry land cropping systems. This is a long-term research project that started at Colorado State University, three locations across the eastern plains of Colorado. It's in the central Great Plains part of the U.S. It's a neat experiment. All three locations have a similar long-term precipitation rate, about 420 millimeters, but as they go from north to south, the evaporative demand, the potential evapotranspiration increases. The main gist of the experiment is crop rotation. The traditional practice is a wheat fallow, it's a summer fallow, one crop in two-year rotation, with the fallow being used to try and store water in the soil. By going to a no-till practice, the experiment basically looked at, can we intensify the rotation to include summer crops such as the wheat corn fallow or a wheat corn proso millet fallow. So it's becoming more intense with less frequent fallow. And after 25 years of conducting that research, the annualized yields show a nice advantage to intensifying the crop rotation. So by going to no-till and adding a summer crop, the water productivity is and by the time you go to a continuous rotation, it's nearly doubling. And so it's kind of a dull graph to look at, so the yield's going up. But this is, in a sense, a management-induced change to improve crop water use efficiency because the precipitation didn't change over that long-term period. Same amount of water, it's just the management. It's just the way the producers are managing that land. So this is a good example to illustrate that while we're putting a lot of emphasis now on breeding and developing crops with drought tolerance, we need to look at the management component of crop water productivity as well. Now, that management that I showed you was system-level management. Nothing was done to the individual crop necessarily to change that. It was the rotation of crops. If you look at a single crop, all those rotations were wheat-based rotations. And the figure here is showing average wheat yield versus the ET. This is a dry land system, so that's just differences in years in the amount of precipitation during the growing season. And you can see a wide spread there. I've drawn a line over the maxima to show, yeah, if everything goes right in a year, how much grain can you expect for a given amount of evapotranspiration? But a lot of those points fall below that line. And again, this is an illustration that where do we need to focus our emphasis? And if you do an analysis, which we've done on all those points, and here I've picked two, I've illustrated two, one that hits right on the line and one that's only about half as water productive. Both of them used about 400 millimeters of evapotranspiration, but the yield outcome was very different. Why? And it turns out that there's a lot of factors in those 25 years of field research experience that dictate that. Sometimes you have a weed outbreak, early frost. Many of those things you can't do anything about. But we found a recurring problem was related to planting and emergence issues. The conversion of this system to no-till and the equipment and learning associated with trying to seed a crop into previous crop residue was problematic. And so just by doing a comparison of, like you see on this chart, looking at, hey, in my environment, what's kind of the maximum potential production per unit of ET? And then analyzing when you fall short of that, you can identify potentially management improvements to push towards that line. So yeah, I can't control frost, but I can do some things with my planting to try and minimize those losses. I want to say something about the fit line here that's fit across the maxima. Where that line intersects the x-axis is an important point. That is the amount of water it takes to just begin producing grain. And it's a function of both the evaporative losses directly from the soil, as well as the amount of transpiration that plant requires before it begins to produce grain. That also can be adjusted through management, particularly the evaporation component. The other part of that line is the slope. And I really appreciated the last presentation. Victor did a good job showing how the evolution of wheat varieties has tried to manipulate the shape of that line and to adjust the slope. And I think we definitely need to address the genetics of our crops and looking for drought tolerance. But I want you to evaluate what you see here, which is one simple example, is, you know, is that the most important thing, or do we need to be looking at the management implications that are currently preventing us from even achieving the current yield potential of our varieties? Okay, so the point of this slide is that the previous slide showed within a rotation and a system you could adjust things. This one showing within a crop, management can influence crop water productivity. And this is data that comes from Victor Sadras. It's the same kind of chart that I just showed you, but now it's incorporating wheat being produced from different parts of the world. So the solid black dots are from the U.S. Great Plains. They correspond to the data I just showed you. And you can see that there's a lot of variation in region. And so it's really kind of highlighting the environmental factors that influence water productivity. So these have to be evaluated within particular regions, and the heat, moisture, climate type parameters that are driving water productivity. Okay, my second example, we'll go into an irrigated system. These are controlled deficit irrigation systems. So we're under the assumption that there's not enough irrigation water to meet full ET demand of the crop. What kind of practices and management factors influence the water productivity, that crop per drop in these systems? I'll focus on irrigated corn. And here you can see the particular experiment comparison, looking at corn in various different rotations. Kind of the extremes at the top there is a full irrigation kind of reference. At the very bottom is an unirrigated corn. It's in rotation with wheat. But the ones of interest are really those two center systems, the controlled deficit irrigation. Can we, even if we don't have enough water to meet ET, can we use the water that we do have to maximize crop water use efficiency? What I mean by controlled deficit irrigation is, wherever possible, timing irrigations to meet critical growth stages of the plant. So in this chart, you see the bars coming up representing irrigation events relative to the growth stage of maize. And in the upper chart, this is a full irrigation system. You can see we irrigated to establish the crop, four or five irrigations during vegetative growth, and then almost a weekly irrigation. This is under a center pivot sprinkler system. Almost a weekly irrigation during the pollination and grain filling. By controlled deficit in the lower chart, we're almost more like a dry land production system during that vegetative growth stage. We will use irrigation to establish the crop and get it up through those early growth stages, and then turn off the water and reserve that water for the later growth stages. And after 6 years of conducting that, I'm showing you here the crop yields. So if you apply less water, your yield's going to go down. Our dry land yield is pretty marginal. This chart shows the water consumption. So in order to look at water productivity, we need yield divided by water. And the numbers that appear here are the water productivity numbers in these systems. The water productivity is highest in the controlled deficit irrigation. The yield is not the highest, but the yield per unit of water consumed is highest in those systems. Very marginal in a dry land system, and you know, it's competitive at full irrigation. So why is it, what is it that with the exact same genetics, the exact same soils and environmental conditions, what drove that? and what it is irrigation timing. We've shown that we're able to manipulate the, primarily it's the harvest index. It's water stress during early season growth is producing a shorter statured corn plant, and then it's still producing a nice ear. And so we're reducing the water consumption during vegetative growth by getting a shorter statured plant. This is just breaking that same data up into year by year through the experiment, and we see that increase in water productivity not every year. The first year it was beautiful, the second year it was about the same, and then another good year. In 2009 we actually had lower water productivity, and this is to illustrate it's not easy. The timing of precipitation interferes with how that crop responds to water, and timing the irrigations to the growth stages just right is also tricky, and that's tricky in a research setting, and if you're trying to translate that out to producers that are managing thousands and thousands of acres or hectares of land, it can get more difficult. In that same research, we have been comparing side-by-side hybrids that are commercially developed. We're not developing these hybrids. These are from large seed companies. We took their word for what they're marketing as drought-tolerant corn hybrids. So I'm showing you here a couple of different field locations where we have three different irrigation levels, what I call a drought simulation. I just showed you the controlled deficit irrigation system and full irrigation. Each is a pair of bars with the drought-tolerant hybrid average yield over time on the left and the control on the right. And I'll let you decide how excited you want to be about the drought-tolerant genetics that are available currently on the market. But I guess the one thing I will say is it seems to me like certain hybrids do well in certain year and field conditions, but that same hybrid doesn't do well in another drought setting. So this issue of timing of water stress seems to be complicated with whatever traits are making these drought tolerant. So it seems tricky. Okay, so summarizing this little part, water productivity associated with control deficit irrigation were due to reduced ET, slowed rate of leaf area development, and that change in the harvest index. And this picture kind of illustrates that. The corn in the near part of the picture is one of those controlled deficit treatments, so you get that shorter statured plant, and then in the back is a full irrigation treatment. And that shorter stature is what's saving some water in that crop system. Okay, so I have been asking myself a question, and I'm going to admit I don't have a ton of results yet. It relates quite a bit to what Victor talked to us about. The question I threw up here is, can the rate and timing of nitrogen fertilizer be managed to further influence water productivity? So for the 6 years I conducted that controlled deficit irrigation treatment, we were putting a lot of nitrogen on, trying to eliminate that as a competing variable. But all the while in my mind, it's like, that doesn't seem right. I'm telling these controlled deficit irrigation plants to not grow very much. I'm giving them very limited water. But through the fertilizer practices, I'm saying, grow like crazy. I'm giving you lots of nitrogen. And so I want to know, can we manipulate the timing and rate of nitrogen during growth stages of that crop to alter the grain-related water productivity? And I'm hoping a picture says 1,000 words here, because I'm not going to show very much data on this. This is a research trial there in Provo. We're growing corn under drip irrigation. And if you can see the corn in the back left of the photo, that's our fully irrigated, high nitrogen rate. That's kind of what I've been doing all along. In the front right of the photo is a deficit irrigated, high nitrogen treatment. And if you look carefully, I think you can see leaves are curling, it's experiencing quite a bit of water stress. In the foreground to the left of the photo is a nitrogen deficient deficit irrigated plant. And yeah, you can see its color is showing nitrogen deficiency, but it's not showing any water stress. And we measure that with canopy temperature. And essentially what happened, it seems sort of intuitive, I guess, is we slowed down the growth of that plant through nitrogen and we've reduced its water consumption. And when we were doing that just with irrigation, by the end of the season, we were able to translate that into a change in harvest index and an increase in water productivity. I have not been able to achieve that with nitrogen, although I feel like that there's something important here, and I hope in our discussion we can talk about it, is maybe nitrogen deficiency is not the way to go, but avoiding nitrogen excess. Because excess nitrogen in early growth stage surely is translating to very rapid water uptake, which is taking away water that potentially could be used during the more critical vegetative growth. Okay, and my fourth and final example is jumping completely out of food crops into turf grass. And, okay, great. In turf grass, in the western states, we're using a lot of water for turf, and I'm really interested in this as a model for any plant. We're interested in the same question. Can you manage nitrogen and water together to reduce or to improve the water productivity of the plant? So this is a pot experiment. The experiment is laid out here. We've arranged the pots for a photo shoot here. On the left half are the deficit irrigated plants. They got 60% of the ET rate and then the 100% rate on the right. And then each of those are broken into thirds with three different rates of nitrogen, low, optimum, and excessive. If you look at that turf grass, the evapotranspiration, whether you're in the low or the full water use, is greatly influenced by the amount of nitrogen. So if you look at the 60% ET rate, putting more nitrogen on, they're using more water. Same thing in the full irrigation. And if nothing else, there's a simple message here, is that when myself and all my neighbors are out there in the spring spreading nitrogen on the turf grass, most people aren't thinking about, hey, I'm increasing the amount of water it's going to take in a very water-scarce western U.S. environment. And so this a simple message here is fertilizer management is water management. Biomass in those same systems. Again, this seems intuitive. You're putting more nitrogen on, you're using more water, you're going to have to mow that lawn a lot more frequently. So I'm figuring this out. My lawn's not quite as green as my neighbor's, but I'm not irrigating or mowing nearly as often as they are. Okay, so I kind of wrap things up with a question here. What turf grass illustrates on the left and what I showed to you with the corn and the deficit irrigation on the right, can nitrogen and water be managed together to improve water productivity of our grain crops? And I'm convinced that they can, but I think it's there's quite a bit of work to do together as a community to try and identify some of those things. And I'll stop there.
Thank you. We have 5 minutes for Q&A and discussion. Judy?
What was your planting density on your corn?
We planted at 34,000 plants per acre. This is the deficit irrigation corn, right? Yeah. Not the dry land. The dry land's much lower than that.
How did you measure ET?
We use a water balance. This is all this is, you know, field scale research. Looking forward to learning about your lysimeter work. But yeah, we track soil moisture in the profile, measure ET by, it's just a water balance. Precip, irrigation. We use a profiling water to try and estimate if we have any drainage. But mostly it's water applied.
What instrument were you using to
measure soil water? We use paired water content and water potential sensors. They're both Decagon sensors.
Idea of idiotype in plant breeding. water use during vegetative growth and so on genetically, possibly in a way that would make the management a little easier than what you're doing. So I think either way, it's really exciting.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I've noticed in my conversations with the seed companies, their drought tolerance emphasis has largely been on the timing of the pollination and silking, and that's very important in rain-fed environments. But in an irrigated environment, it's not the trait that I see as the most important for water productivity. And so, yeah, there's a lot of a need to kind of match up what we're selecting for. So.
Going back to the mixing genotypes and environment, in your figure of benchmark of how much yield they get from the particular level of transpiration and how much they are opposed to falling down from that line.
The wheat data, yeah. This is the wheat data you're talking about, yes.
You listed a number of factors that are behind that deviation. We need those factors, we're not cutting us. Does it mean that you and I
all I did was in that list, we looked at every point that fell below the line and said, why? And so we looked into the production records, any notes that we have. This is an experiment of 25 years, so it predates me. But we tried to identify a key reason for why, and then we looked for which of those was most common. Right?
So when you analyzed those possible factors, did you consider cutting us as a possibility, or
the
question is,
yeah,
it is not in the list because it was considered and it was proven it was not important, or it was not considered?
No, that's a good question. I guess my best answer to that is the approach in that long-term experiment was to take the most current hybrid or variety of wheat that was available that our wheat breeding group was saying, yeah, this is where you should be. And so there isn't a consistency of cultivar through that 25-year experiment. So in some ways, yeah, we're kind of overlooking what I recognize as a hugely important factor in that experiment. So.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.